Welcome to Credits Due, the podcast where we talk about one actor's filmography, one movie at a time. I'm Ben Cron.
And I'm Tyler Owen.
Today on the show, we are talking through our sixth episode on our series on Keanu Reeves. Today we will be talking, or we will be jumping right into our main film discussion, and then starting off with some trivia and ending with a couple of recommendations. Today's movie, we will be talking about The Replacements, directed by Howard Duché, stars Keanu Reeves, Gene Hackman, and Brooke Langton. The Replacements is about when the NFL's Washington Sentinels goes on strike, the team's owner calls former NFL coach Jimmy McGinty out of retirement to coach a ragtag team of replacement players to finish the season's last four games. Tyler, do you have some trivia for us?
Yeah, we're going to continue the fib trivia section here, where I give you four bits of trivia from the production of the film, and you're going to tell me which one is the fake that I just made up. So,
yeah.
All right. So, trivia point number A, or number A, letter A. In the film, everyone refers to Shane Falco's meltdown in the 1996 Sugar Bowl. But in reality, there was no Sugar Bowl game in 1996. And B, during filming, Keanu Reeves was offered a tryout with the Baltimore Ravens. C, the stand-in kicker, not the actor Nigel Gruff, actually kicked a 65-yard field goal during one of the takes, which would have been and still would be a record distance if accomplished during an NFL game. And the last one, D, Archie Harris, who plays Wilson Carr in the film, was an actual replacement player during the 1987 NFL strike.
Whoa. Okay, so one of these is fake.
That's right. Yep.
All right. You tricked me last time, so hopefully I'm seeing through your mistake, or I'm seeing through your trick and not pointing out a mistake, but I'm going to go with the third one, which is the kick. When you said the actor kicked a field goal.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because you said the character's name instead of the actor's name.
Oh, did I really?
Yeah. Was that just a mistake?
Are you sure is that the right name?
Yeah, you said Nigel Gruff, and that's the character's name.
Yeah, you caught it. I must have pulled that from the wrong spot. But yeah, I thought I was going to get you too, because that one was really close to being.
Yeah.
That was the actual trivia bit was that the distance that was accomplished in the film would have been a record distance, but no one actually kicked that. It just, didn't really even reference it in the movie that it would have been a record, probably because they were hesitant. If that were to happen before the film came out, then it would no longer be a record.
Oh, sure.
But for fans of football, they would have known that watching the film, that would have been a record distance. So you got it. That was the fake.
Interesting.
My bad.
Yeah, so the first trivia point I did see about the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah.
And I think it was, there's no 96 one, like, out of a technicality almost, because the 97 one was in, like, January.
Right? Yeah.
So it was, like, just pushed back, like, a few weeks.
Yeah, the two seasons on either side of 1996 ended up, there was one at the end of 1985 in December, and then one at the in the beginning of 1997 in January. So
And then the second one about Keanu Reeves trying out for a football team, I bet that's probably normal for football movies, right? But I kind of want to, I hope that was filmed. I want to see that, like, yeah. Like bonus feature.
Right.
To just see him play football with, like, NFL players.
Yeah, that would be entertaining. And then, yeah, I guess one of the kind of very secondary actors for the final bit of trivia, he was an actual replacement player during the 1987 NFL strike. So kind of interesting. Wow. Yeah.
That's another thing that blew my mind, that there was actually, it's like loosely, or the idea is taken from actual events, that there was actually a football strike.
Yeah, that was the point that I feel like a lot of the movie believability hinges on. And yeah. I was surprised to learn that as well after watching it, that that actually did happen. But there are so many aspects of this that they are done just for the benefit of it being a comedy that I have no doubt are just ridiculous in comparison to the actual strike.
Yeah. Yeah, because I had no idea that NFL was unionized.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, I guess it's believable. It's totally believable, but I had no idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's dive into the movie if you're ready.
Yeah.
So yeah, just like we were talking about, the film starts off with, I believe, the last football game that was played before the strike happens, right?
Right.
And it's, they're in Washington, D.C., Washington Sentinels, that's a fictional team. And they, the owner of the Sentinels, right after the game, he reaches out to Jim McGinty, played by Gene Hackman, who I think is, I mentioned this in The Matrix, and it's kind of true in this movie, but I feel like when you pick a good Keanu Reeves movie, I feel like it's a movie where he is surrounded by good actors, mm-hmm. right? And I think that just elevates Keanu Reeves' performance.
Yeah.
Because Gene Hackman is the MVP of this movie. I think he's absolutely incredible in this movie. When otherwise it's kind of like a dumb, dull movie.
Yeah.
Leaning on almost parody at some points.
Oh, totally. To the point where now, while I was watching this, I was like really struggling to figure out why this wasn't meshing with me. And I think a big part of that was that it felt like two completely different movies. There was one movie that Gene Hackman and Keanu Reeves were in, and then there was this other movie that everybody else was in. And I think I illustrated this point perfectly when I told my wife that this movie seems like an Adam Sandler movie where they replaced Adam Sandler with Keanu Reeves and told him to play the part straight.
Yeah.
Like, I could absolutely imagine Adam Sandler in this role, and he would fit in with the slapstick nature of the whole rest of the film.
Well, I think there is a film. What?
Yeah, The Waterboy. Yeah.
Oh, no. I was talking about what's the movie where, I think it's Adam Sandler, and he goes to prison, and he plays on like a prison football team.
Yeah, is that, he's in another football movie? Is that The Longest Yard?
The Longest Yard, yes.
He's in that one too?
Adam Sandler, yeah.
Oh gosh, okay, I guess I've forgotten that, but yeah, that's very similar.
I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure Adam Sandler is the main character in that movie.
You might be right. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah. But, so Gene Hackman, his only terms are that he gets to pick all the players, and he gets final say on all the players. And it seems like he takes a quarter out and flips a quarter. And I think that's his decision to, like, like a yes or no decision on if he's going to coach this replacement team. Very odd.
You're right. That was Adam Sandler in The Longest Yard, by the way.
Yes. So then there's a long montage of them basically rounding up all of his players. In a scene that I guess this probably predates Armageddon, but I felt a lot like the scene in Armageddon where Bruce Willis makes his list of all the people and the military goes out and, you know, catches these like basically like criminals, like scumbags.
Yeah, it's a very it feels like a very 80s montage and way over the top.
Yeah, but there, so like Orlando Jones plays this, a guy who works at a convenience store, I think.
Yeah.
And he's like chasing down this kid who stole a candy bar. And then there's two bouncers at nightclubs. And then there's Nigel Gruff, who's played by Reese Afons, who is a bar owner, but who was once a soccer player. Mm-hmm. Like he was a football player in England or Europe or somewhere. Who his claim to fame is that he can kick a football for 100 yards, mm-hmm. the entire length of a football field, which is pretty impressive. So then he chooses Keanu Reeves, who
is... Can't leave out Jon Favreau now.
Oh, yeah. But Jon Favreau wasn't... Was he in the like, montage?
Yeah. Yeah, he, like...
What?
He was, like, a special agent cop dude or something, and he, busts in on a, like... I don't know if it was, like, a drug dealer or something, and beats the shit out of him.
Damn. Sorry, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Jon Favreau, who is great in this film, but also like a very like odd role for him.
I know, right?
Because he's basically he's just listed as Bateman on IMDb, but he's almost like an ogre. Like it's like the human version of an ogre. Like just the weirdest, or like the Hulk almost.
Yeah, like he's
probably better.
He has very diminished mental facilities, just to put it nicely. But yeah, I don't understand how that character is like a cop, but I guess that works. I don't know.
Yeah.
He was pretty good though.
So strange. And then, okay, yeah. So he reaches out to Keanu Reeves, who is Shane Falco. Who is, he was a former, college football player, correct? And he, like, this Sugar Bowl that we talked about, he, like, totally, like, whiffs it. Like, it's apparently a terrible game. They never go into what actually happened, right?
Yeah, I think it just... They lost by 45 points, and it was just a string of bad plays throughout the whole game, I think, where he just screwed up. But yeah, and it's interesting to point out, too, that this is the second film in which he plays a former Ohio State quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
In Point Break. Yeah.
Being the first one?
Same school.
Weird.
Yeah.
He didn't go to Ohio State. Is that like
I don't know what that's a reference to. I don't think he did, but he played football in high school.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as far as I remember.
Strange. So then there's a long montage of them at their first practice. And I'm kind of skipping through a lot of stuff because it's a lot of kind of dumb jokes. And a lot of just comedic moments. Like, there's almost no story for, like, a good hour. right? Of the movie?
Yeah. It's it's so weird how the beginning of this movie is so fast paced, but at the same time, almost nothing is really happening.
Yeah.
It's just, I think they just had to get through a lot of characters that they wanted to be part of this ensemble. And yet there's no real meat or anything to those introductions or it's just, they're literally caricatures that they just have to introduce you to because they play a part in the rest of the film. But yeah, it's, and it was interesting because I was reading some interviews with Keanu Reeves, before the podcast, and there was some contention about the direction that the film was going to go. And that kind of goes back to what I was saying about this feeling like two different movies, because as far as I can tell from interviews with Keanu, he thought that this was going to be a much more serious role and it was going to be more of a dramedy instead of a like slapstick, you know, Adam Sandler style comedy. And you can kind of see that in the way he plays the part. I think that his performance is pretty like understated and actually pretty good compared to some of the other films that we've seen him in.
Oh yeah. And which I think for the end game of the movie, I think it works because he's a great straight man to like all the comedians who make up the rest of the football team.
Yeah, I think,
and
my biggest contention with that though is that like I don't think any of the comedy is funny. You know,
it just
he does play well against it because, you know, he can be that straight man going through this experience and you really want to root for him to succeed. But man, the jokes do not land in this movie.
Oh, yeah. One of the the two jokes that work for me are they almost feel like they belong in a parody movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like this movie would have worked a lot better if they made it more of a comedy. And and like almost parodied like sports movies,
right?
And the first joke that I liked was with the cheerleader.
Mm-hmm.
The cheerleader, played by Brooke Langton, so the cheerleaders are on strike, I guess, and I don't quite understand what her role is. Crossed the line as well.
Never really explained that. Like, are they in the same union as the football players? I don't know. Or are they just, you know, sitting out of solidarity? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. But so, so then a part of this montage, there's a bunch of terrible jokes about her auditioning, cheerleaders. And she ends up hiring only strippers.
Yeah.
Or whatever. It's really dumb. But then there's their, so then Keanu Reeves and her meet, and they, you know, they like strike a connection or whatever, and mm-hmm. she offers him a ride home. And this was I thought this scene was hilarious when she's driving like a maniac through traffic, she's completely chill. Like,
yeah,
she's driving like she does this all the time. She's weaving in and out of traffic, like going on the wrong side of the road. And they're having a conversation. And when it shows her, she's just chill, driving, having a conversation. And when they show Keanu Reeves, he's like terrified out of his mind. And it's so good. It's such a good joke because they don't play it up too much. Like, it's only him like reacting to it. I think that's why I like the joke so much. But it seems like that moment is so outlandish that it seems like it shouldn't be in this movie. Like,
well, yeah, I mean,
back to your
it
tier two movie thing.
And that's more because it feels completely separate from everything else. Like, it doesn't give you any real insight into her character. In fact, it seems to be completely opposite of what you perceive her to be in every other scene, which I guess maybe that's part of, like, the joke, is that you wouldn't expect her to be this crazy driver.
True. But yeah.
It seems to be there for the, like, 2-minute sequence, and then it's never mentioned or, like, has any impact on the plot at all. So.
Oh, and just like, I mean, this whole, like, first hour of the movie is just that. It goes from joke to joke.
Like, you know, how great would it have been if they call back to that by, at the end of the movie, when he needs to get back to the stadium, she drives him and gets him there.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Come on. Like, I don't write movies, but that seems so obvious.
She was too busy. She was too busy being a cheerleader in that game.
Yeah.
But before this scene, there's a great hero shot of Keanu Reeves when he first enters the football stadium with his uniform on, and it's this long shot of him running into the field. His hair is waving.
Like, slow motion.
Slow motion. It's totally this hero shot, and it's absolutely great.
Yeah.
And also, long-haired Keanu Reeves.
He's back. Yeah, man.
Yeah. Out of the Matrix long enough, that hair has grown back. It's nice flowing. Okay, then they go and play games. Also, there's 4 games left in the season, and if they win 3 of them, they go to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So they lose the first one. They lose the first. I don't remember what the score is, but I feel like it came down to the last play, right?
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, they had an opportunity to at least tie or win the game right at the end, and they screwed up. Mm-hmm.
So they lose the first game, and then they go to the second game, and they win the second game.
Oh, it was because he changed the play. Like, the play was going to be that he took it in, right? Or something like that?
Yeah, and he passed it instead,
yeah. And the coach tells him, like, winners want the ball or something.
Mm. Yeah, and that is his big flaw is that Gene Hackman will call a play, and then Keanu Reeves will switch it when they're in the huddle. So they lose the first game, they win the second game, and then, God, I don't even remember what happens. After they win the second game, this is when I think the movie starts to get good, because a plot starts to happen.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a bunch of scenes with Keanu Reeves and Brooke Langton, and they're like going on dates and crap, and they're falling in love and whatever. And the original quarterback, who is, I wrote his name down, Martell, Eddie Martell, he crosses the line and comes back to play, which is, I think, like, a huge, like, no-no, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, if the union votes to strike, then if you cross the picket line, you're in big trouble.
Yeah. And I don't know if they ever explained why he did it, but I always assumed that he crossed the line because they're playing their last game before the playoffs, and if they win, they go to the playoffs.
Right.
So I assume he just wanted the glory of going to the playoffs, or wanted to make sure it happened.
Mm-hmm.
But also, they're playing against Dallas, and Dallas's entire team crossed the line.
Right. And apparently, and so, when I was reading about this, that actually happened in the 1987 replacement games. There was a game in which the entire Dallas team crossed the line before the game started and played a team of replacement players.
Damn.
Yeah. That's kind of brutal.
Yeah. So this, their replacements are playing like a legit football team. And so the owner of the Sentinels basically forces Keanu Reeves out of the game so Martell can play as quarterback. And during this, the last game, it's almost like I felt like he was throwing the game on purpose. Like there's some times where he would fail at plays just because he couldn't play with the team that he like never practiced with.
Right.
But there's one where he just chucks the ball out of bounds.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much football you watch, but that's
none.
Okay. Well, I grew up watching a fair amount of football, and that's typically done when a quarterback doesn't have enough time to get off a play and they don't want to be sacked, but they can't just throw the ball down on the ground because that's called intentional grounding. So the best way to stop the clock in the play is to throw it out of bounds. So there's no chance of it getting intercepted or anything. So I think that was like him being frustrated with his receivers that they weren't in places that he could throw to or that he expected them to be. So,
all right. I guess I get that.
Yeah.
Okay. So then at the halftime, Keanu Reeves shows back up because Gene Hackman, as he's leaving the field, a like TV reporter comes up and she asks him, what does your team need to win this game? And he says, heart.
Miles and miles of heart.
Which is something that he said to Keanu Reeves earlier in the movie, because he said, like, you're a better football player because you have heart.
Mm-hmm.
And then it cuts to Keanu Reeves on his boat, which I guess we didn't say, he works at a marina and he lives on a boathouse in the marina. Whatever. He sees it. He's watching the game and he sees it. He sees him say that we need heart. And he says, all right, I gotta go. I gotta save the day. And he shows up, like the entire team, like kicks Martell out of the locker room, and they go and they win the football game.
Yep.
Basically. And I don't know what, did we miss anything? I kind of rushed through that.
No, yeah, it's cool. Yeah. I think we've pretty much touched on it. Like it's a football movie. Like they come back and win the day and all that stuff. I think your point about the plot not really starting until about an hour into the movie totally stands, because we skipped over a section of the movie that was probably maybe like 15 or 20 minutes long. And we didn't even mention it because it has nothing to do with the rest of the movie. The entire bar brawl and jail scene.
Oh, yeah.
Where they are celebrating their first win of the season. And the players that are on strike come into the bar. And, of course, a big kerfuffle starts and they all start fighting. And the entire replacement team gets sent to jail. And then there's like a dumb dance number in the jail.
I Will Survive.
And they all dance the electric slide to I Will Survive.
Oh God.
And this was it was interesting because this was in interviews with Keanu Reeves. This was one of the things where he specifically mentioned how they were filming this scene and he was thinking to himself, you know, as an actor, you think, well, is a scene like this actually going to play? Is it actually going to be funny? And, you know, I got the sense from this interview that he was just being like politically correct in Hollywood, and what he really thought that this scene was bullshit and he didn't want to do it. And I totally agree. Like, he wanted to make a different movie that was kind of serious, like maybe a slightly comedic version of Rudy. You know, it's like, this is a fun but like uplifting football story. But what we got is like this slapstick nonsense comedy where they dance to the "I Will Survive" in a jail cell.
God, yeah, that was a terrible scene.
Yeah.
So strange. And then to the second joke that really worked for me, that I referenced before, is I think before, I don't remember if it's before or after this jail cell scene, but the scene where he first goes to Langton's bar, the girl, the love interest, she works at a bar,
right?
And he goes there at closing time and like has a drink with her, and then as he leaves, he turns around and looks at her, and in one of the many scenes where they just stare at each other while like some pop song plays in the background, like this happens, and he starts to walk towards her to kiss her, and then John Madden comes in and starts doing play-by-play of the kiss, and it's like, this, that's totally a parody.
Yeah.
Like, that's a moment that is worse in a parody movie, because it's funny, it's really funny, because I mean, John Madden is just John Madden.
Yeah, I mean, his inclusion in this movie was actually great. Like, almost all of his sequences were pretty funny. The other thing I did want to mention was the only other player, unless I'm mistaken, the only other player on the team that really gets any sense of character development, and granted, it's small, but is the kicker, where he's introduced as this, you know, he's kind of a schlubby guy and down on his luck, but he's got his own bar. And we learn, like, right at the end, I mean, it's kind of hinted at earlier in that same game, but at the end of the game, the last game, that he owes a bunch of money on his bar. Because he was gambling? Is that what it was?
Gambling, yeah.
Yeah, so he was under the thumb of some mafia dudes or something, and they wanted him to throw the game. And he ends up telling Falco right before he's about to make the kick, and that's how Falco like takes it himself and decides to run it in for the win. And like it's a pretty great moment that none of the other football players really get to have, is like this moment of like, oh, being a part of this team like made me a better person, like I didn't do the bad thing, you know, or I found something here that I didn't have outside the team, like we're a team now. And I thought that was nice, but none of the other characters that were introduced were more than just a caricature, you know.
Oh yeah, like I mean, John Favreau's character is I mean, he's just a dude that like hits people a lot.
Yeah.
And like Orlando Jones, who is good, I think, and really funny, but he's just the dude that sings.
Right.
Like he's the guy who just starts singing "I Will Survive."
And the dude who literally cheats during the game by having glue or whatever on his hands.
Oh really? Yeah. I didn't notice that.
Oh yeah. There's a whole sequence where they like put glue on his hands so he can catch the ball towards the end.
That's great. There's also there's a moment where someone drop kicks. I think it's John Favreau. He drop kicks someone on the other team, and like a yellow flag is thrown on the play, but like I feel like you would get kicked out yeah, if you drop totally. If you drop kick someone.
Yeah, there's a lot of they take a lot of liberty with the rules of football in this game or in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what else. I don't know what else there is to say. I think it's a funny movie at parts, and definitely the end, the like third act is way better. And I was enjoying it towards the end when it like actually started to have a plot.
Yeah.
But otherwise, do you want to go into final thoughts?
Yeah, I'd say we just move on. Let's get it over with.
Yeah, I don't really have too much to say. I think we hit the big points. I don't think we honestly missed anything. So for final thoughts, we'll give Keanu Reeves a rating after every movie, 1 to 5 Keanus. I'm going to give this 3 Keanus. Because I think it's fine and adequate, and I do actually think that Keanu Reeves is actually pretty good playing a straight character to the all the comedians in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'm going to one-up you and say it's a 4 out of 5 Keanu movie.
Whoa.
Just because I think it's worth watching for the Gene Hackman and Keanu throughout the film. It's kind of surrounded by some really ridiculous trappings and poor pacing and plot issues, but he is pretty good in this movie. Like Keanu Reeves mm-hmm. does a good job. I kind of wished I saw another movie with him as a quarterback, because I feel like he kind of made that attempt at this movie and it just didn't work. But yeah, he's good in a sports movie. Like his the part that cemented the 4 out of 5 Keanu's for me was his speech towards the end in the locker room, when he basically opened up about his experience in the 1996 Sugar Bowl, and how, or maybe it was earlier in the movie where he mentions
was this
it.
About fear?
Yeah, his speech about fear. Yeah. Yeah, and how like making a mistake can just put you into this downward spiral where you don't think you can do anything right. And by virtue of that, you like constantly screw up over and over and over, and you can't pick yourself back up. And I feel like that's like, he kind of nailed that pretty cheesy speech. And that's like the key to any good sports movie, is like turning a really cheesy, like, dialogue or, you know, speech into something that actually lands and works. And I really like mm-hmm. that. So yeah, I say it's a 4 out of 5 Keanu's.
Yeah. I completely forgot about that scene. And it's important to put that in context, because I think it's after their first game they played where they lost.
Yeah.
Gene Hackman tries to make them talk about their fears.
That's right. Yeah.
And of course, they bring up spiders and bees. Yeah. And then Keanu Reeves brings up quicksand, and that entire speech is about his fear of quicksand.
Yeah.
But it's right. Obviously it is an analogy to, you know, him screwing up that game. And then it's also kind of, it mirrors everyone's like, how they're all kind of screw ups and they're getting a second chance to be football players.
Yeah, I thought just that scene, that little nugget in the movie is there, and it's totally worth watching. But yeah, this is it's a weird, you know, turn of the century movie, like just kind of feels a little trapped in the past and some of the comedic elements. But yeah, it's decent, worth watching.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was also some weird, I mean, it came out in 2000. There's some weird like racial stuff. Like there's a sumo wrestler.
Oh god.
Like
yeah.
They get a sumo wrestler, and there's a lot of like weird like Chinese, like Asian, like making fun of Asian things. It's very odd. And there's a deaf guy who I think is the running back.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some like weird jokes on like sign language. It's, Yeah, there's some weird moments that, I mean, it's totally, like, back then, it, our society was fine with that kind of jokes, but watching it now, like, it's just like, whoa.
Yeah, it's there in comedy. I think the biggest thing with offensive jokes is you have to turn the punchline into the people who are doing the bad things, not mm-hmm. the people who are being made fun of, you know, like,
yeah.
So in this case, it does a little bit of both. Like, I feel like the deaf character actually played pretty well towards the end of the film when the original quarterback comes back in and he screws up the pass because he doesn't even know or care that the guy can't hear him call the play. So he didn't know where he was supposed to go because he's just shouting at him and the guy can't hear him, you know? So like that, that works well because you're using this element of the team and the way they've been working together cohesively. And you have this guy who's the asshole who doesn't care about it. He's deaf. He becomes the punchline, you know, not the other way around. So yeah, there's some, definitely some weird kind of leftover junk from previous generation of comedy.
All right, let's get into recommendations. Every episode we'll leave you guys with some recommendations, not necessarily movie related, but this time I do have a movie to recommend. This movie just got added to Netflix, and I watch it, I've only seen it about 3 or 4 times maybe, but every time I watch it, it just absolutely blows my mind.
Yep.
This is, of course, Christopher Nolan's The Prestige, the magician drama with Christian Bale and Hugh Jackman. Absolutely, like, I think that this is like a masterpiece of filmmaking, and the twists it goes through, and like just the enjoyment of knowing how the movie ends and just watching how the movie like gets there is truly like the incredible part. And also the movie straight up tells you the two twists of at the end of the movie, like in the first two scenes, right?
Yep.
And like, if you don't know the twists, then it's just two random scenes. But if you know the twists, it's like, it's so obvious that the movie is like showing you,
yep,
like, hey, like, remember these, because
yeah,
this is basically what we're doing here. Truly incredible. Yeah, it just got added to Netflix. Like, I'm probably going to watch it like 10 more times now that it's easily available for me.
I think that towards the end of Christopher Nolan's career, I think people will look back and realize that one of his greatest films he ever made was one of his earliest. Like, it is not only is it an amazing movie, it's an amazing movie about movies. Like, there is a huge metaphor in that film about like commenting on the idea of having a twist in a movie. Like, the movie is about twists and it has an awesome twist in it. So it's freaking amazing. Yeah. I'd have to totally second that one. That's great.
Yeah. It's very funny, 'cause this is the movie he did right before The Dark Knight. I believe, right? I think he did it right after Batman Begins and before The Dark Knight.
Was it? Yeah.
And I think The Dark Knight is probably what a lot of people think as his best movie, but even though I do think that's an incredible movie, but The Prestige is just like a masterclass of like everything that's good about movies.
Yeah, I think, and it will hold up better over time than The Dark Knight will.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And Christian Bale, both Christian Bale and Hugh Jackman are absolutely incredible.
Yep.
Like, I think this is probably Hugh Jackman's best movie.
Yeah, you might be right.
His best role, definitely. I think it's incredible to watch him. Cool. But yeah, Tyler, what do you got?
So I'm going to recommend Halt and Catch Fire. I don't know if you've watched this at all, Ben.
No.
It's on Netflix, the first three seasons, at least right now. It's a show about the early days of basically the Silicon Valley boom. Although it doesn't take place in Silicon Valley, at least not yet that I know of. It actually takes place in Texas, giving some perspective into the beginnings of like companies like Texas Instruments and some of the other early entries into the computer business, personal computers, basically. So it's kind of like an alternate history version of the early days of the computer business, where it follows some fictional characters and their fictional businesses. But they make references to the early days of Apple computers and Steve Jobs and Bill Gates and all these other big players. But it's an excellent character drama. I think the strongest thing that the show has going for it are the actors and the characters. The tech stuff that kind of surrounds the whole trappings of the show is actually really accurate and really well done, depicting that period in time. But even if you don't know anything about that stuff, you're still going to enjoy this movie because the characters are so well written. Lee Pace is in it. He plays probably the main character, and people might know him best as the recently villain from the first Guardians of the Galaxy. But he was also in another show I loved, Pushing Daisies. Rest in peace.
Oh yeah.
but yeah, his range is really on display in this, because I cannot think of a character that I hate much more than him, but also still have some sympathy for. Whereas in Pushing Daisies, he was one of the most lovable, likable characters. I really love him a lot as an actor. So it's I'm about halfway through season two, and I can't wait to see where it goes. It's gotten better, I think. And it's one of those shows that successfully navigates a major like change in like setting and goals for the characters between seasons. Basically you kind of think, you know, towards the end of the first season, oh okay, I kind of know what the format of the show is and how it's gonna progress, and then they just throw everything in a blender and everything gets messed up in season two, and it still works. Like, there are very few shows that can pull that off, and I'm having a lot of fun with it. So
okay. Cool. How is that show still going, or has it ended?
I believe season four is going now, maybe.
Okay.
And I've heard good things about it, so that's what made me want to jump in and check it out.
Cool. Yeah, that's a show that has been on my list for a long time, and I've just never dove in yet. But
yeah.
Very cool. All right. Well, that has been credits due. Join us next time when we'll be talking about Constantine. Very excited about that.
Yeah.
I've only seen it once. I remember really liking it when it came out, when I was a teenager. Didn't know anything about the world, so
yeah, one of the
I'm
best,
very interested.
One of the best depictions of the devil on film.
Yes. Who plays the devil?
Oh, God.
Sorry.
Put me on the spot. I don't remember his name, but yeah, he is. He's kind of a character actor, but yeah, he's great. Yeah.
Okay, so that's been credits due for Tyler Owen. I'm Ben Cron. Until next time, always remember, pain heals, chicks dig scars, glory lasts forever.
Hell yeah.